Hello, and welcome to the latest episode in the Enterprise Time Security Podcast series. My name is Ian Murphy, and my guest today is Eric Newcomer, CTO at WSO2. Today, we're going to be talking about APIs. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. Happy to be at WSO2. About ready for a change after 10 years in banking, and it's great to be back in technology. Sort of a back-to-the-future thing for me, although a lot has changed, including at WSO2.
What many listeners won't know is you're a big Alan Moore fan, so there might just be a couple of Alan Moore references that will drift into this podcast.
All right, bring it on. Yeah, I started out with him with the Watchmen series back in the 80s and pretty much collected everything he's done since then.
Digital transformation relies on being able to integrate systems both internally and externally at a code level. For many organizations, that starts with APIs they own, but what they want to do is adapt those for different parts of the app ecosystem, be internal developers, external developers, or maybe make them public. But should they be adapting, or should they start with purpose-built APIs?
There's too much of this. Let's just wrap what we've got and expose our existing programs, whether they're Java beans or web apps or whatever. And there's not enough of the redesign that people really should be doing. I think about it a little bit like in the old days when you're doing database design, you had to design for how people were going to read and retrieve the data, because storing it wasn't the big operation. It was the retrieval of the data that you wanted to make sure was done correctly. And it's similar with APIs. You want to make sure that who's ever consuming them is getting the information that they want in the format that they want it and how they need it. And this means really thinking about how the API is going to be exposed externally. A best practice would be to think about that anytime you're developing an API so that transition is easy. But unfortunately, people don't always do that.
But if we're going to do that, do we need an API first mentality? Because if we don't start with an API first, surely we're just stuck in this whole loop of rejigging something that we already have.
Yeah, I really think so. I think about it in the context of a service-oriented architecture. We have these two big design patterns in the industry, the object-oriented and the service-oriented. Service-oriented is much more aligned to APIs and interfaces. And the reason for that is because service-oriented architecture is functional in nature and more data-oriented. This helps you to think about the alignment of your API with the service you're trying to provide as a business or as an application externally. There's a lot of design patterns, a lot of good information out there about how to do this in a service-oriented architecture way and represent it in the API in the right way to provide that service out. That's what people really should be thinking about. How does this appear to someone else? Not so much, what do I have that I want to expose?
Let's go with an Alan Moore factoid here. How many people listening in who work in cybersecurity realize the mask we associate with Anonymous, WikiLeaks, and other organizations is actually the mask from V4 Vendetta?
Oh, yeah, the famous V4 Vendetta mask. And what a great series that was. Perhaps people have seen the movie as well, so they can see what the mask looked like. Yeah, Anonymous took it over. You can get them, I think, at Halloween stores now. So I'm expecting everybody to be wearing those next time I go out.
That's a really useful segue to the next question. So if we're going to start with an API first approach, surely that means we have to start with security before we get anywhere near an API. The problem with APIs is security is still an add-on. When you look at companies and talk to people, how do you get them to sit back and do a full security assessment of their intention for an API before they write that first line of code?
That's a big problem. People often don't even think about security until it's almost too late or at the last minute when they're ready to go to production. But to me, it's like the user interface. If you don't design a good user interface before you start coding, if you don't have that right, it's very hard to go back and fix it later. You really need to make sure you take the security requirements into account when you're doing your API first design and make it part of the development process as early as possible. That way you have less friction, less problems. I was in a security role just before this, and I can't tell you how many times we had to send developers back to the drawing board because they'd missed something or they'd done something wrong. That's really the last thing you want when you're starting to try to go to production and get something done and deliver something for the business. So the earlier, the better, and avoid problems later.
One of the things that Moore tends to do with his characters is give them a complete mental wipe. When they come back, everything that happened before is a complete lie. When we talk about security and developers, it kind of seems that that's where a lot of people would wish they could be. You wake up one morning and everything that's gone before just didn't happen. Here's a question. Can APIs get us to that clean state?
That's a good way to start. If you're thinking about doing things API first, if you define a clear target state, you want to disassociate whatever it is you're defining as the target from where you are today. Too many times people think about where they are today as the ultimate implementation of the business requirements. Every time you are doing a project, you're making some shortcuts and concessions and changes based on the capabilities of the technology that you're using. It really requires a fresh look to define exactly what it is you want to do, especially if you're doing a strategic project that's changing how your business is exposing API functionality you're delivering to your customers. If you're digitizing things that hadn't been digitized before, you want to define clearly how it should work. From there, work back to what you already have and figure out how to incrementally move to the target state. But if you start with what you have and try to figure out where you want to go, it's much more difficult to have really a good imagination of what you need.
APIs tend to get incredibly complicated incredibly quickly. Like any other code, they evolve over time. The problem is, people just comment out stuff. They don't deprecate it. They don't review their code on a regular basis and take out the junk. When we look at the rest of computing, we've gone from big static machines to virtual machines to tiny lightweight containers that we continually refresh. Why can't we do that same reduction with APIs?
People tend to get lazy. They sort of iterate through things. They evolve things. They like to modify and update without really thinking how those modifications and updates impact the overall design that they have. It's important to keep going back to that design and making sure things are governed correctly. The API-first approach really requires strong governance to make sure that whatever API you're working on makes sense as an API by itself and in conjunction with the other APIs that are around the enterprise. And very often, somebody will update their API in isolation without thinking about the impact on other people. The best example of a successful governance is probably Amazon. They built their website through hundreds of thousands of RESTful services that have strongly governed interfaces. And that's the only way they can really put their website together and evolve it so quickly. If you search for Amazon Death Star, you can see the cloud of microservices that they use. To get that to work for an application, you really need strong governance and a strong oversight and not allow somebody to just change something sort of willy-nilly without thinking about how it affects other things.
Governance is good, but if we're going to have all these APIs, we need a clear architecture. The only way to connect things properly is to understand how they relate to each other. Go back in time, and we had business architects, we had system architects, we had software architects who understood our entire ecosystem. Are we actually seeing the arrival of the API architect? And are you seeing API architecture designs beginning to appear?
It goes back to what we were talking before about API first and service-oriented design. You definitely want to have your target architecture expressed in a nomenclature or a notation that illustrates how the services work to provide the business functionality you're looking for and how they work with each other. You need that roadmap mapped out. If you don't set a target, you can go anywhere, or anywhere you go is where you end up, and that's where you are without knowing where you're going to go. You're kind of wandering around. Having a target architecture expressed in service-oriented architecture notation that informs how to build the APIs, how to map them into the code that executes them, and how they relate to each other is critically important, and that is the foundation of governance, as you say.
But is there not a risk here about repeating some of those mistakes that came with SOA and web services? You talked just now about that risk of large APIs. One of the things that destroyed a lot of the dream of web services was people just wrapped anything and everything. You ended up with COBOL as a web service. That's just not tenable in an API world, is it?
You see a lot of pollution and what you might call cruft in those generated web services. This was, to me, one of the biggest mistakes made in the web services time, where vendors incorporated them at their customers' request into their existing toolkits. You ended up with EJBs generating web services and .NET objects generating web services. And if you looked at the code that was generated, it was full of all of these .NET and Java artifacts, as opposed to accomplishing the original goal of WSDL and web services, which was to be technology independent. The industry got carried away fitting web services into what they were already doing, as opposed to thinking about how it really could be something technology independent and a lingua franca. We can certainly see some of the same tendencies in RESTful APIs, where the industry has moved to now, and I think rightly so. and you see toolkits that will generate RESTful APIs or stubs and skeletons for RESTful APIs. And you have to be careful as well that you don't end up with a lot of that cruft involved.
Well, one of the things that held us back previously was we were still thinking mainframe. We were still thinking multi-tier architecture. We're now moving to a world where people are still kind of thinking multi-tier, but it's no longer about those tiers on-premise. It's hybrid cloud, private cloud, public cloud. All these people who are moving down that line with cloud as their goal are starting to think about what do they change, how do they change. Are APIs the underlying thing we need, or is there something else that still needs to happen here?
I'm fascinated by how REST came to dominate computing. It's a completely different stream of technology than we were working on in enterprise computing for years and years. I was in the computing industry for 25 years, as I mentioned, and I saw the evolution of our proprietary RPCs to DCE RPCs and .NET RPCs and Java RPCs and web services, all based on the same paradigm of programs calling each other to exchange data. When you look at REST, it's coming out of the documented-oriented world, SGML, HTML, HTTP, a completely different model for exchanging state, the document-oriented model. The idea was you had a document, HTML or XML or whatever, you requested it, you downloaded it onto your server, you modified it, and then you sent it back up, and that's how you exchange state. RESTful APIs, therefore, have a very higher level of abstraction than web services ever did. So you're sort of exchanging these chunks of information as opposed to thinking about programs talking to each other to exchange data. That's had a huge impact on how things are designed. When we create APIs now, we're doing RESTful APIs that are much more abstract than what we would have done with web services before. We're seeing this inflection point for all these old mainframe-oriented applications that have to redo how they think about abstractions of communication, of exchanging state, and of how they are really going to be deployed and evolve and communicate in the new world. You have a re-engineering that's needed to be done because you've got this whole technology stack coming basically out of left field if you're an enterprise computing person, meaning out of the SGML document-oriented world into enterprise computing and changing things up. We have to be careful that things are done correctly, but we have to understand the new paradigm as well, which is a different layer of level of abstraction than previously we were working with.
But is this all about people not wanting to take a risk? We've had APIs to connect our systems together for decades. We've always done interconnect between systems. Yes, we've had different ways of doing it, but we've always had to connect systems together to make something new. How much at the moment do you think people are hamstrung by the speed of change, the speed of digital transformation, where they suddenly get a little scared about how fast things are going for them?
I think everyone's worried about this. The rate of change is accelerating always. I was in banking for about 10 years, and there I was trying much more to work in the arena of proven and established technologies. When you're in a technology company, you're thinking about what's coming up and what's going forward. I'm finding as a re-entry situation going back into technology, there's a lot to learn. So much has changed. It's a little daunting. It's a little scary to see the rate of change. But I think there's nothing to do but embrace it. And here at WSO2, we're seeing a phenomenon of people looking to the cloud and the re-engineering for the paradigm shift that I was just talking about. And there's insufficient developers. How do you help people cope with this complexity, with this rate of change? You try to create a development environment that's a bit more abstract and does more for the developer than was done before. We're looking at that very strongly together with API First. We're looking at how can we help people overcome these technology changes or incorporate them more easily and create applications more simply and quickly.
Do you think part of that concern is because IT is no longer driving this? If we look at the big drivers for APIs and digital transformation, they're coming out of financial services, shopping, people that want new applications all the time, where they're constantly evolving applications to meet customer experience and customer demand. This is no longer an IT-driven environment.
Sure, it's a huge pressure coming from the consumer side. I was in the institutional part of Citibank, and there we would hear from our customers that, hey, we look at the consumer website, and it's much easier to use than your portal. Why can't you provide this same level of capability as we're getting on the consumer side? We're used to that now. We want a better customer experience, and this is coming from all over. The big web companies have innovated so well and so quickly on this front that the pressure is coming down into all the enterprises. It is daunting. We are getting more people from the business side. I've seen the term citizen developers getting involved in this kind of thing because it's just kind of too much, because on the IT side, you've got all these old systems to work on and keep going that takes a lot of time and effort. The enterprise is kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place where things are changing very fast on the web and with the new technology and the new paradigms to catch up. And at the same time, they've got to run the business on the existing systems in the old way of doing things. It creates a lot of difficulties and challenges. These are the things we're trying to address here at WSO2 with our API-first API manager capabilities. I should mention our pivot to the cloud for these things, where we're going to help out with API integrations there as well.
If we look at processes inside organizations, they tend to get written, carved on a stone tablet, and placed in a position of reverence inside organizations. When we move to a fast-changing API-driven world, those processes are almost equivalent to the API. As the API evolves, so does the process, and vice versa. Do you think there's a need for process engineers to look at what they can learn from how their APIs are used?
It's a culture change. We've been talking quite a bit about the technology change and the paradigm shift from RPC to REST-based APIs and on-prem to cloud computing and that kind of thing. But it's not just the technology. It's also a culture change, as you point out. Companies have to figure out a better way to organize their development teams and to respond to the rapid changes. Companies are trying to adopt more agile methods with varying degrees of success, and they need to adopt the DevOps model, which is also a challenge. Companies tend to have their own ops divisions along with the development divisions, and modern best practice says you put these functions together in DevOps. You have developers doing the ops function. And that's a big culture change that needs to be taken into account as well for companies to be successful.
One of the key things about DevOps is everything's a pipeline. It's allowing security to get in there and write its own pipelines to ensure that code is properly tested as we go through development. Can APIs themselves become pipelines?
Yes, I think pipelines can produce APIs, and they certainly have to produce all of the code that sits behind the API. So you can divide the problem up between you've got the API that abstracts the interface and provides the interface to the consumer of the API, to the customer of the API who wants to get the information or interact with your company. But behind the API, because it's an abstraction, you have to have the execution of the code that provides that functionality, provides the data. An API is basically a request for data to be returned, but to get all of that data in shape, in an existing IT environment, or even a modern one, you may have to go to 3, 4, 5 different systems, integrate a lot of systems, do some data transformation, do some heavy lifting around the execution and the processing to get it all in the shape that it needs to be externally consumable. And that can all be done in a pipeline, but again, that's a lot of work on the technology side and the culture side to change how things are done and built and deployed.
One of the challenges of building APIs is how do we verify and test them? It's rather like the whole problem of, do we trust developers to test and approve their own code? When we look around our business environments, the problem is it's not just our own APIs we're dealing with. We're integrating with other people. So how do we make sure that they can trust the API we make? How do we make sure they can verify our API and we can verify theirs?
That's a big challenge. It comes down to documentation in some senses. We have a common way of documenting APIs in a Swagger file, and we try to exchange the Swagger files, providing testing framework. You can develop tests out of the Swagger files as well. But you're right, you have to set up this whole process. That speaks again to culture change and a need to change development practices, where you put your API out there and you put it through a series of stages where you have the initial set of users that test it as a sort of a friendly test for it. Then you maybe expand out the level of usage and you keep incrementally confirming that this API is capable of handling the traffic and fulfilling the function for not just one user, but other users. There's a whole process involved in it, and this is another significant change companies have to confront and overcome.
When we're connecting our systems together with APIs, we might start to think about looking at what our partners and our customers are using their APIs for. But we never look at their partners and customers. And in a properly digital transformation solution, we've actually got 5, 6, 7, 10, 20 tiers of complexity here. How do large organizations help everybody else in that chain do a better job of securing APIs?
Oh, it never ends, does it? You can go to the nth degree of a web page calling a web page and JavaScript embedding JavaScript and calling other JavaScript. You see this very clearly in all of the embedded ads on web pages, some of which are dynamically generated, which makes it even harder to trace and confirm that the code you're getting is safe and secure. There are tools emerging on the market for it. The security vendors and network vendors are coming up with tools that trace all of these interactions so you can get a visual depiction of how many different interactions there are between APIs on web pages and how many different components are being called. But then you still have to track down and make sure that everything is secure and safe. And that's sometimes a big challenge. And I think there have been some incidents as a result of this problem being hard to handle.
So let's go back to Alan Moore for a second. We talked about DevOps. Who would you choose of Alan Moore's characters to run your DevOps environment?
Oh, gosh. That's a good one. I think sometimes it needs a little bit of magic because you have to have faith in changing the process that's going to work out. So maybe some of these superheroes from top 10, they had in that series, he had a different superhero for every different type of capability. So maybe I could ask him to invent a new character who has the magic wand to fix all the development processes and realign them to CI/CD. But, you know, there's another character, Mina from the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, who has the capability to corral all those personalities into coherent actions.
What about DR and Quinch?
DR and Quinch, one of my favorites. These guys fit in very well in terms of this chaos engineering aspect of APIs, where you put your stuff out there. And this actually is something I should have thought of when you mentioned the testing aspect, because there are a set of tools coming out that will sort of pull plugs randomly and cause random failure, so you can see how the application handles them, the API handles them, and shore it up in those areas. And those guys, I think they're back from the 2000 AD series, and I have their collected stories, and they're just full of mayhem and mischief, and that's what you need when you want to make sure things are bulletproof.
Bulletproof. What a wonderful way to think our APIs might finally end up.
We can hope.
Eric, thank you for talking with me.
Ian, thanks. It's been a pleasure, and looking forward to the Alan Moore, whatever he does next.